All right. Thanks, everybody, for staying until almost the bitter end. I'm going to talk to you about some things I've been talking about for a while, about when we adopt conservation practices, there are certain trade-offs and things we need to consider. So somebody very pithily put up a slide very similar to this a couple of years ago. When they talked about certain conservation practices, they're considered as a sacred cow that you shall not criticize, right? And all of us have our favorite conservation practice. Full disclosure, my favorite practice is blind inlets, so just so we're aware. So don't say anything bad about blind inlets. But it can be really difficult to convince some conservationists or farmers or others that are deeply involved in some of these practices that not everything is going to be good about that practice all the time, everywhere. So, we've seen some of this, and I've got into some really heated debates with some people from time to time about different practices. So this is some data we had from Indiana. I collected in my previous life where we measured four different conservation practices. So for example, the black bars are grassed waterways. And it works really well for everything except for soluble phosphorus. Another one that we looked at is conservation crop rotation, which worked well for phosphorus and sediment, but then we had increases in loading when it came to the nitrogen constituents. So we need a suite of practices to place across the landscape. In my new role at Temple, I work closely with some modelers, and they're constantly being asked to model some of these novel conservation practices. The bioreactors, the drainage water management, there's some really neat things going on in streams with two-stage ditches or other ways to work with streams or drainage networks. And they don't yet know how to model these. So they ask to develop a database that would help provide what they call soft data. So some system by which they can understand if their estimates are at least in the ballpark whenever they're asked to model these. So that's what we've done, and we've developed, right now we have a really exciting title, Conservation Practice Effectiveness Database, that we're going to use to do this. So my objectives of this talk are to kind of combine these two things. Can we use this new database to evaluate trade-offs related to conservation practice adoption? So a little bit about the database. We're using published literature from international sources. Now this may also include gray literature. I think we only have three or four gray literature sources in here so far. But we've got data on 13 different practices. And this does include some of the more common practices that have been around forever. We've got no-till, we've got grass waterways, but we included these just so we could really get a structure on how to handle the data and what we wanted to show and what all we needed to include before we moved into the bioreactors or the two-stage ditches or some of these newer practices. So far we've got 119 different papers that are represented, and this gives us on individual rows within the database a little over 1,700 observations. When we calculate a practice effectiveness, we're wanting to do that on a load basis. That's our priority. Not everybody reports loads. Some people only report concentration, so that's our secondary. And then still another set, only about 10 papers I've found so far, report flux. And I haven't included that because, you know, We're so many columns, and I don't want to add 30 more columns to include fluxes for 10 papers. But we might do that at some point. So we do include both surface runoff and tile discharge where it's available. There's our list of constituents there. Out of the data that I've been through, I think I've come across two papers that report something other than these constituents. So I haven't included those yet, but if there are emerging contaminants of interest, then of course we can throw those into the database. So for the practice efficiencies, we have 2,161 practice efficiencies calculated so far. So that's for like a bioreactor. If we have a value for the inlet and a value at the outlet for nitrate, that would be one constituent. For soluble phosphorus, that would be a second. And for total phosphorus, that would be a third. So just so we're aware. And a practice efficiency, what a positive practice efficiency means that it's helping to remove some of the nutrients, and a negative efficiency means that it's increasing the nutrients. So we'll start off with no-till. This is for surface runoff. I was early in my career presented to three busloads of SWCD folks who had spent their entire lifetime trying to get farmers to adopt no-tillage. And whenever I talked about some of Andrew Sharpley's data that we may be increasing soluble phosphorus, they were coming at me with pitchforks, and I'm glad I was in Indiana, because if there had been a stake big enough, they would have tied me to it and lit me up. But on this kind of meta-analysis, we can see that kind of bears out. The numbers that you see there, the N equals, that's the number of comparisons that we're able to report. So even though this is a very old practice, we don't have a tremendous amount of data on this practice to show the true practice effectiveness, even though in the model there are some good algorithms to represent this. When we look at tile discharge from no-till, some good things seem to be happening for phosphorus and total kaldol nitrogen, but it's a bit of a push or a wash with the soluble nitrogen and the atrazine. Bioreactors. Everybody that publishes on bioreactors loves to talk about nitrogen, but there are other things that flow through bioreactors, believe it or not. And since these systems are only on tile drains, there is not any data that I'm aware of that reports a surface runoff. So we're just focusing on what's happening in the tile drains here. And again, with this practice, things look really good for nitrogen, not so great for soluble phosphorus, which is not surprising considering the reducing conditions there and some different things going on. Looking at drainage water management, so there's been a debate over the last 5 or 10 years about whether or not drainage water management is going to increase the amount of phosphorus leaving those fields because of reducing conditions, and everybody's afraid that iron is going to reduce and release some of the phosphorus. So I was really interested in this graph, and for tile drain flow, it's actually a positive impact for soluble phosphorus. I'm not sure I can entirely explain why, other than maybe retention of the discharge a little bit, but that's an interesting result. When we look at surface runoff, though, things aren't always as peachy as the tile drainage data show, with negative practice effectiveness for nitrate and atrazine. However, in these fields, if you're going to have drainage water management, you're really flat topography, so the relative water loss from tile drainage compared to surface runoff is going to be skewed heavily towards the tile drainage. Practice that I've worked with before, conservation crop rotation, everything on this practice looks plum peachy. A few kind of outliers there, not a whole lot of data on this. And for this one, it's kind of difficult to compare apples to apples with rotations across the world, really. And similar looking results for tile drainage from this practice. Looking into cover crops, here's another one where a lot of us have been really concerned about the soluble phosphorus losses from adoption of this practice. And I was actually surprised from the available data that we have for surface runoff, the practice efficiency for soluble phosphorus, the mean practice efficiency there is actually higher than it is for nitrate. Not sure I can explain that one quite yet, but and good practice efficiency for tile drainage, there's no data that I'm aware of for some of the other constituents. So in conclusion, conservation adoption across the landscape is essential, and we need to consider different practices across different locations to intercept nutrients or trap or different things. I would encourage you, if you have data sources that would be applicable to this database, please let me know. And as you publish your data, even if you have no effect or even a negative effect on certain constituents, don't leave that data out, because it is very useful. So few, if any, practices are going to address all resource concerns equally. And we need to consider stacking practices throughout the landscape. And Mark Tomer and EDF have done some really great things with that kind of work. So thank you. Not yet. I just handed it off to the modelers. I've got it in an Excel spreadsheet, and I'm really hopeful that they'll be able to put it in SQL or Access or something and allow it to be easier to query the data. But it will be soon. Yes, ma'am.
So is this database using some of the same material that we're in the
Some of it is, but not all. So Manage focuses on just U.S. sources, and it's looking at any data. Manage includes any data on runoff or tile drainage in agricultural and forested landscapes. So the charge for this database is to compare the impacts of conservation practices. So there are a lot of papers out there that are really solid papers, but they don't specifically compare one practice to a control or some other way. So
those ones are being managed, but not in the database.
Right, yeah.
So do you have a place in your database where you have like two practices together, and what would be an additional impact? I mean, that would be something for the future.
Yeah, that one's a difficult. How do you separate out the impact of individual practices? So, and it depends on how the paper is structured as to if that's possible.
So you get enough data from the papers themselves, or do you contact the authors to give you more?
I've data? Only looked at literature to this point. Yes.
Do you have like minimum data requirements for inclusion in the database, like multiple years of data?
No,
make
I.
Sure, you've got experimental control without.
So if it's a refereed journal publication, I assume the science is solid enough to be included in the database. I do give a little more scrutiny if it's a gray literature source, and I read it much more thoroughly. I think only two data sources have only given a conservation practice effectiveness, and I've used that number directly. Otherwise, I need some measure of that we can use for comparison. So in some papers, it's just, this is 4 years of data for this practice and 4 years of data for this practice, so that's two rows. Other studies give, this is what it was for 2011, this is what it was for 2012, and if I can get annual data, then I'm using that annual data as the comparison. Another really difficult thing is to not repeat sources, because some people really like to use the same data over and over and over.